I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. And this morning, we have a lengthy agenda, but most of the bills on the agenda are simply re-referrals as we go through the adjustment of the new procedure. Some of those bills we would have normally been able to have simply referred to other divisions by the now famous memo approach. But now we have to do the re-referrals through the floor. And so, like we've done in the past, there will be a series of motions to accomplish that. And as I've said, depending on the speaker, I've done both procedures as chair. But this is the first time where we've had the change kind of midstream. So that will be our series of motions at first for re-referrals. And Representative, wait a minute, we better do the minutes. Representative Olson?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for the March 2nd meeting.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. And as I was mentioning, and our goal is to get through the bills hopefully by 10:20, and that would leave us adequate time or about an hour for the stadium reserve discussion. And in preparation for that, that's simply going to be informational so we know what the background is on how the stadium was funded. And there may be at some point during the legislative session legislation. I'm told that Representative Rosen has introduced a bill dealing with the stadium reserve on the Senate side. At this point, we don't have a bill in the possession of the House dealing with the issue that she's addressing, which would be the refinancing of bonds. But that's not our purpose this morning. It's mainly to get background, and hopefully we'll have that hour available for it. Representative Olson, would you care to move the first bill?
I move the Health and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson?
I move House File 1 as amended be referred without recommendation to the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division.
Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. We now have House File 1246, Representative Morrison's bill. Representative Olson?
I move the Health and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1246.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson?
I move House File 1246 as amended be referred without recommendation to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division.
Okay, any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried. We'll now go to House File 4 by Representative Lesh. Representative Olson.
I move the Health and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 4.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson.
I move House File 4 as amended be referred without recommendation to the State Government Finance Division.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried. We now have House File 1405, Representative Stevenson. Representative Olson.
I move the Energy and Climate Finance and Policy Division report for House File 1405.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson.
I move House File 1405 as amended be referred without recommendation to the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. House File 2806 by Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance, and Policy Division report for House File 2806.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Long.
I move House File 2806 as amended be referred without recommendation to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Okay, well, now we have House File 1257, the Prescription Drug Benefit Transparency and Disclosure Required. Representative Liebling, you're here. I would have recognized you earlier. I guess I didn't see you sitting there.
All
Representative Liebling.
No problem, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I move the Health and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1257.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Liebling.
I move House File 1257 as amended be re-referred without recommendation to the Senate to the State Government Finance Division.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Okay, good point. I was just reminded that, just for committee information, I didn't mention it earlier, that if these are favorably acted upon in those divisions, that they would ultimately come back to Ways and Means. Remember, we had that discussion the other day, but just Ms. Conley reminded me to announce that so that everybody's clear. Okay, now we go to House File 2001, Representative Cantrell. Is he? Okay, Representative Olson.
I move the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division report for House File 2001.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question on this bill. If you look on lines 2.19 through 2.21, there was a change in wording there that was amended in committee, adding the language, the awarding entity, and taking out more specific language. I just would like a better explanation, understanding of the reason for those changes.
Yeah, and I had a heads up that you had a question. I was going to entertain the questions on the next motion. This is to adopt the division report, but being that you posed the question, Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Torkelson, for your question. It's my impression that this was changed in order to, I think, be more encompassing of the administration of or the entity of which is administering the contracts. So that's it's a technical change to that, Representative Torkelson.
Representative Torkelson. If you have further questions, let's adopt the division report.
All right,
and
that'd
then
be
we'll
fine.
Make
Thank
the
you,
motion
Mr.
that it
not a problem
and discuss it there. So any questions or any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson.
I move House File 2001 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Torkelson with your follow-up.
Well, thank you. I guess my underlying question is, are there other awarding entities besides state agencies that would award these contracts?
Representative Cantrell, and I understand the department is here for technical questions if need be, so Representative Cantrell, would you like to defer or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I will defer to Eric Amarkey from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights.
Okay, and if you could officially identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric R. McConkey, the Government Relations Director with the Department of Human Rights. To make sure I understood or heard the question correctly,
It was, why was the language changed on line 2.20 and 2.21?
Yes.
So currently, under current law, entities that are required to administer a workforce certificate are all state agencies, the Metropolitan Council, and Minsky Schools. The reason why it was changed to awarding an entity was to make sure that the entity that received the original contract was the one who would be ultimately responsible for revoking the contract if that all ultimately occurred. So to prevent a different agency from being able to revoke the contract of another agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in all cases, would these entities be state agencies?
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, correct. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Olson, would you care to renew the motion?
Renew my motion that House File 2001 as amended be recommended to be placed in the General Register.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you. And we'll now go to Representative Eklund's bill, House File 3375. And Representative Eklund, and maybe being that you're before Ways and Means, you might want to explain that there's no impact on the general fund with your presentation. That would be the main issue for us. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3375 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3375 provides funding for the Boyce Fort Tribal Employment Rights Office. The legislature previously provided a grant to this office 3 years ago. The office provides direct employee training for band members. With previous appropriation, the band was able to achieve the following employment outcomes. We had 44 participants, 12 attained technical occupational licenses, 10 received support services, 16 immediately entered employment upon graduation. Additionally, we are aware that others entered employment off the reservation, and we know more entered employment after we submit our report to the state. Mr. Chairman, members, these are just some of the numbers that we can show. The average income for some of the folks that went into occupations, cement masonry, their average income was $52,460. And then we had several that went into road construction, and that pays at around $52 an hour. I want to thank you, everybody, for the past support, putting all Minnesotans to work. And with the money we're seeking in this bill, we are looking to focus more training on certified career services like bookkeeping, accounting, and emergency management services. There's currently a lot of retirements that are looking at happening on the Boyce Fort Reservation, so they're looking to get people trained in for those. And currently on the reservation, we're standing at about a 38% unemployment rate. There's no impact on the budget because there is currently money in the Workforce Development Fund to fund this. So that's why it's going directly to the General Register.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like the program is being extended. Are there any other changes to the program besides the extension?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson. No, it's going to be run similarly as in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. And then what is the balance in that Workforce Development Fund? Any idea?
Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I don't. I'll have to find that out and get back to you.
Is there anybody present that to be able to answer that question? Mr. Marks is looking. Are there any other questions while he's double checking?
Not for me, Mr. Chair.
I believe
the Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr.
Back as soon as
thank you, Mr. Back. Chair. Thanks, Representative Eklund. Representative, I did see in the summary that in 2017 we had another appropriation for $230,000. Do you have any evaluative information to share about whether or not that expenditure, which looks to be very parallel to this one that you're proposing, whether it improved the the unemployment rate on the reservation or not.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski. I don't know whether it improved the unemployment rate. Our tribal, especially northern Minnesota tribal groups have a traditionally high unemployment rate because of some of their remoteness. So what we're attempting to do here is, especially with the equipment operators that we're not seeing coming out of for road construction, so the folks work in the woods for their large timber program, and then they are, because they have worked on the equipment out in the woods, and they're qualified to work for some of the construction companies, and we're seeing members go to work for the for those construction companies in the summer.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Eklund. I just wish with some of these bills we could, especially where we've got history behind it, if we could actually see if these expenditures are working or not, it would help help us more in the future. But certainly the area that you described, Representative, I think sounds like one that we're all interested in seeing them succeed. But if expenditures of money aren't helping, maybe we need to think about something else. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Marks has the information for Representative Torkelson and the committee. Mr. Marks.
excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, members. This is one where the fund balance isn't necessarily so helpful because it shows a balance at the end of fiscal 20 of $1 million. However, that assumes that the way the Workforce Development Fund works is that money that's not spent otherwise is available for the dislocated worker program. And then so in any given year, what hasn't been appropriated is showing up as going to the dislocated worker program. The fund balance currently shows almost $53 million going to the dislocated worker program this year. The typical spending for the dislocated worker program is between $20 and $30 million. So when there's the discussion, there's a balance available. There's the expectation that the dislocated worker program is not going to spend all of that $52 million. And so if it's spent in the historical pattern, there's probably a $20 to $30 million balance in the fund. But the fund doesn't officially show that because it's available to be spent.
Representative Torkelson, did that get you the information you needed? Or is your head spinning like mine?
Well, I hope I don't have to repeat that explanation, Mr. Chair, because I don't think I could.
I think the bottom line for purposes of this bill, the funding is there. And then there are other issues, I suppose, for other discussion at a different time. Any further discussion? Representative Eklund, would you care to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3375 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Okay, we now go to the discussion of the... Are they here yet? We got a message that MMB is on the way. There are our first testifiers. Is the Office of the Legislative Auditor present? They are. Okay, we'll, in the interest of time, we were going to have MMB first, but they're not here, so we'll go with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and the Legislative Auditor is here. Yeah. And... if you could focus perhaps on the recommendations, Mr. Nobles, as opposed to the whole report.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Are we missing somebody? You seem to be looking for someone else.
Hoping that MMB arrives soon.
Well, you're in the same position as MMB.
Mr. Chair, let me just give you a little bit of a background. Chris Boozy, the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division, and by the way, for the record, I'm Jim Noble's Legislative Auditor. But Chris Boozy, who is not with our office now, really was the one that saw the need for this audit. And I think it really kind of came because we're looking at the financial statements of the Metropolitan or Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority from time to time.
Mr. Knowles, maybe I should just back up a second. I didn't really, for the committee members are aware of what meeting is on the stadium reserve.
Yes.
But for others that may be listening to the tapes, or I'm not sure, sure if we're being broadcast this morning, we are. So this is a discussion of the stadium reserve, yes, just for the benefit of the people outside the building. Mr. Noble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think for the benefit of others who may be listening to this, I think the first thing to be said is that when the legislature put together the financing package for the new Viking Stadium, they put together a very complex financial structure with various sources of revenue. And then you created the Metropolitan, or now called Minnesota, Sports Facilities Authority to manage what now is called the U.S. Bank. And so, again, we look at the financial statements from time to time of the U.S. Bank and the Minnesota Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. And we knew that there was a reserve created for paying off the bonds. And some of you may recall that one of the first ideas was that gambling revenue, pull tabs, were going to be a significant source of the revenue. The Vikings obviously were going to put in half of the stadium. City of Minneapolis was going to put in some. But a lot of the money for the state was going to come from an expansion of gambling, going to electronic pull tabs. And initially, that just didn't work. The amount of revenue that was expected to come in wasn't coming in. And so you made a number of other adjustments along the way to try and make sure that there was enough money in a reserve account so that the commissioner of MMB would be able to pay off the bonds. And, for example, you put in some money from the corporate tax receipts. You also did a one-time tax on cigarettes that were in storage, essentially, either on the shelf, in a distributor, and that was a one-time source of money. So, again, I think being very prudent, you wanted to set up a reserve that wasn't going to depend on the expansion of gambling. Well, as time went on, the electronic pull tabs really escalated, and so the reserve amount increased significantly. And so I think you have our report. And what you see is that the gambling revenue has increased significantly. It's now projected around $38 to $40 million that's coming in. There's also the corporate tax revenue that is coming in. And so this amount in the reserve has really grown significantly. And when we did our audit, it was at about $58 million. But what's interesting is that as you project out the amount that is going to be in the reserve as a balance, it's going to grow significantly. And Mr. Boozy and his team did analysis that projected that by 2023, the reserve would be $193 million. So where do we end up in terms of a recommendation for this? Well, you're implementing, Mr. Chairman and members, the recommendation that we made. And that is, we felt that this money, this reserve, was simply not visible enough. That when we went over to the Department of Management and Budget to look at the reserve, it really wasn't in the accounting system. It was visible only on a spreadsheet kept at the MMB. And so one of our recommendations was you really need to make this more visible so that the legislature and others are more aware of that growing balance, so that they, as policymakers, can make some decisions about how that money is going to be used. And then we recommended that the legislature give greater oversight of that fund. And so those two things kind of working together, MMB creating an account that is more visible for you and your staff to see, and then you as a legislative body periodically bringing the commissioner, who is now in the room, up to join us at the table to tell you what is he doing with all of this money.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. It's good to see you too.
He's pinch hitting for you.
I like that. That's great.
We knew you were on the way, but in the interest of time, we decided to hear the legislative audit report first. They were second, relatively speaking, on the agenda with the stadium reserve.
Sure. Okay.
So why don't we let Mr. Nobles, if he is done, then we'll...
Mr. Chair, as I said, I really feel like by holding this hearing, you have really advanced the recommendation that we made. Now, there is an organization, a commission on financial planning, fiscal affairs and planning, that has some jurisdiction over what happens with the reserve, but it really hasn't met. And the commissioner has periodically sent communications to members of that commission about what actions he's proposing to take, but they've never really met to decide whether or not they think those are good ideas or not. So there is some failing, frankly, on the part of the legislative branch in its oversight of this money. And so our role really is to bring you, the legislature, together with the commissioner of MMB to talk about this. What is going to happen with all of this money that is growing in size? So I'd be happy to turn it over to the commissioner, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
There is at least one member that I think has a question of you, Mr. Nobles, and that's Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nobles. The question would be for Mr. Nobles and the commissioner. It begs a question, are there any other spreadsheets around that aren't in the accounting system other than this $193 million spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, I will direct that question to the commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the reason we set up accounts in the accounting system is when there's an opportunity to when the legislature has appropriated money to be spent from that account. Clearly in this area, the executive cannot spend from the account without seeking approval or permission from the legislature. So it's not an ongoing account that money is spent from. It just sort of sits there until the legislature decides what to do with those funds. So that's why in this case we didn't feel the need to set up an account. We didn't want anyone spending out of it, so to speak, if you will.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, are there any other areas where money's accumulating, the people's money's accumulating similar to this, that we might anticipate the need to create an account in the future for the transparency and oversight that Mr. Nobles mentioned?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, not that I'm aware of, but we'll certainly do another review if you'd like, but I'm not aware of any at this time.
I'd like that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think what we'll do next, I've got a question, but then we'll move ahead with your formal testimony. But Mr. Nobles, you mentioned 2023, and that's a crucial date. Would you care to tell us what's important about 2023, or maybe that'll be the commissioner in his testimony?
Mr. Chair and members, that was simply as far out, I think, as we could go in terms of estimating growth, and it's an estimate, and we know with a very volatile economy now that any estimate of future revenue is always subject to some skepticism. So maybe the commissioner has more.
The reason I wanted to focus on that was, you know, we hear different numbers, and some of them are projections into the future of where the account will be at a given point in time. And I thought maybe that's what you were referencing, but maybe that's more appropriate for the commissioner when he does his testifying. So why don't we maybe start with your formal testimony, Commissioner Franz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure how much background you all want, but you know, one of the things that I'm sure Mr. Nobles talked about was this stadium reserve was a complicated, the stadium bill was a complicated bill that was set up in 2012. And one of the things that we've found over the years is that as we set this up, it authorized the state to issue bonds in the amount of $498 million appropriation bonds to do the stadium construction costs. As you know, it expanded the lawful gambling to increase general fund revenues to support the stadium. and it created the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority to see over the stadium, to act as the entity in charge of running the stadium. It also provided for a stadium reserve and ongoing operating and capital reserve expenditures. Some of you may also recall there were backup revenues in the event that the new charitable gambling revenues did not meet our expectations, and we've never had to utilize those revenues. The backup revenues are in the bill. But the key in terms of financing was that the expanded lawful gambling revenues were really generated because of the new games that were added at that time, the electronic linked bingo and electronic pull tabs. These, at the same time, we increased and made some changes to the overall lawful gambling structure by organizations that pay those taxes. You may recall that the initial gambling revenues fell short of our expectations at first, and in 2013, the legislature provided additional revenues. At that time, I was Commissioner of Revenue, and in the Tax Conference Committee, we added a one-time tax of $26.5 million on the cigarette floor stocks at the time. When the cigarette sales tax was increased in 2013, there is a situation where you have stock on hand on the day that the tax becomes newly effective. And there was that increase in the tax for that floor stock that the legislature agreed to put into the stadium account to make sure we had enough funds to pay for the ongoing construction costs. And they also provided for an opportunity to put up to $20 million a year in corporate tax revenue. We had expanded some corporate tax revenue issues in 2013, and that new revenue stream we were given the authorization to include up to $20 million annually to the stadium reserve account. Now, the stadium reserve was created to account for excess gambling revenues after stadium-related expenses are paid. So the design was to, first of all, make sure we have enough to pay for the ongoing cost in those first years, and then to pay for the ongoing debt cost. We estimate that expenditures are about $42 million annually. A little over $30 million of that goes toward the payment of the debt service on the bonds, and then there are some other revenues expenditures that we have. Right now, the stadium reserve is projected to have $78 million at the end of fiscal year 20 and $263 million at the end of fiscal year 23. That's what we released on the February forecast just a week or so ago. Now, as Commissioner of MMB, the statute provides the authority to use any other reserve for any shortfall. So if the gambling revenues are not sufficient to cover the actual expenditures that year, which are about $42 million annually, or if there are other purposes related to the stadium that we think are financially prudent, which we haven't done since I've been commissioner. But as Mr. Nobles mentioned, we have to consult with the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy whenever that happens. It's happened twice, where we sent over to the Legislative Commission our recommendation that we use some of the reserve because the revenue had not met our expectations, and in both cases, as he mentioned, they did not meet, and therefore the request was allowed. Now, if you look at the stadium reserve balance in this chart, you can see kind of what's happened over time. And ever since about 2015 or 16, the gambling revenues receipts have started meeting our expectations and now going beyond our expectations. So each year you see here the difference in the November and February forecast in 2018 through fiscal year 23, and this shows you the growth that we've seen and the growth that we project over the next several years. So we believe that at the end of the biennium in 2023, at this point there would be $263 million in the reserve account. So the other related revenue would pay for the other expenses on the $42 million annual basis. This is my favorite slide that we have that Mr. Nobles talked a little bit about. One of the things, and I mentioned early on, it was a very complicated and complex financial arrangement to track all of these expenditures, and we did so in a way that complied with all the financial and legal requirements, and I think it's important to make it clear that the amount of money was where it's supposed to be, and the expenditures were made according to the law, and the debt service payments have been made. And anyway, we feel really good that we were able to have the OLA come in. I think it was in November, if I recall, Mr. Nobles, and do this overview and analysis and audit of what we were doing, and found that we were in compliance. And obviously made some recommendations of as how the legislature and we can work more closely together to monitor this going forward. Now, here's where we come to the sort of the issues about what do we want to do in the future. So just as a recap, in 2014, we sold $462 million in state appropriation bonds, and that provided $498 million in public construction funds. The state's share of that construction cost was $348 million, which is 69.9%. The city of Minneapolis' share of construction cost is $150 million, which is 30.1%. Now, the annual general fund debt service cost, as I mentioned, is $30.2 million, and this will be paid through 2043. This matches the terms of the current Viking lease through 2043. Now, there's a 10-year optional call date, and this is where 2013 becomes relevant. We can refinance on a tax-exempt basis on or after June 1, 2023. This is, as I mentioned, about 10 years after the original bonds were sold. Now, with respect to the city of Minneapolis, beginning in 2021, the state is required to withhold a portion of the Minneapolis sales tax. Now, this withholding will be used for debt service support and to reimburse the state for the annual operating and capital reserve expenditure advances that we have made. So these withholdings from the city of Minneapolis continue until 2046. Now, in terms of the refinancing options, there's a couple options that we can consider. If we refinance this debt, we can realize general fund savings. I think I've mentioned before, maybe just a week or so ago, that this is something we do on a regular basis, and not just with respect to the stadium-related bonds, but in terms of the portfolio of bonds that we have for general fund, general obligation bonds, and others, we continually analyze and assess when we should refinance those. And since 2011, we have saved the state over $300 million in interest savings alone by refinancing those bonds as they have become due. 1.7 years and now 10 years is the date that we're looking for. So in 2023, we believe that we could maximize the overall savings by refinancing, assuming the economic situation stays the same, which seems highly unlikely given the last week or so. But anyway, tax exempt rates would need to rise by more than 150 basis points to break even on a tax refunding if we did it now. So we could convert the bonds to taxable, refinance them now, but then we'd have to hold on to those savings because none that we cannot pay off those bonds until 2023. And so the second option is to do a taxable basis a basis sale now to lock in the rates, and this would realize the savings earlier. But the savings, if we did that now, would be less than what we did if we waited until 2023. So our current recommendation is that we look at refinancing these bonds when they're callable in 2023. And more than likely be able to save a significant amount of interest, assuming interest rates are within the same ballpark at that time. Now, with respect to the stadium, the budget reserve, that is another separate question about what to do about the stadium reserve amounts. That clearly can be used for repayment of the or retiring some of the debt that's already there, but that can be done beginning in 2023 as well. And we would recommend, given the current budget and financial situation, that we continue to wait. We have no recommendation to use that money this year until we have a little bit more further indication in 2023. So that really highlights the areas in terms of how the bonds were purchased and how we've maintained payments on those and the amount of money that's in the account and the opportunity to save interest beginning in 2023. And with that, I'm happy to take questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I've got a list of about four names. I'll start with Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to talk into the microphone, so I've got my back to you. I'd like to just ask a couple of questions about two of the slides and the implications of a phrase. The first one on slide four, or for other uses related to the stadium deemed financially prudent. It looks like you would have authority to do that. Can we assume that is you would only use that for taxpayer-funded portions, or does the team owner benefit from any of those decisions?
Mr. Chair, Representative, excellent question. Clearly, we would only engage in that kind of activity to the extent it supported the state's interest in the stadium, and not we would not find it to be financially prudent to do something that would specifically help the current occupants. But, you know, it doesn't mean that something we do might not indirectly benefit them, but clearly the idea here would be to do something. Let's assume that there was some something that needed to be done to the stadium on an emergency basis, you know, for the structure or something. I mean, maybe along those lines. But we haven't come across anything at this point that we've deemed financially prudent. But you're right about your caution.
And then, Mr. Chair, on slide 9, really sort of the same question. When you refinance and there are savings, are we assuming that the savings, we are saving only taxpayer money, or does the team owner benefit from any of that refinancing?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is only the state's financing. So those are only, we're only talking about the state's debt and the state's saving interest money that would go into the general fund.
Representative Hausman. Hey, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commissioner. Commissioner, I'm going to refer to a couple of the slides here. We're going to go off into the tall weeds a little bit on debt financing first. So on slide 7, when you talk about the 10-year option call on the bonds that were let for this project, are they all refinanceable, or was this a laddered issuance?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, not all the bonds were sold in 2013. You're correct. There were some sold in 20. They were all sold. I'm sorry. I thought there was some in 2014. I'm mistaken. Yeah, they all were sold in 2013 or 2014, and so the 10 years is up in 2013.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Commissioner, then on slide 8, I noted in an earlier slide that the debt is retired in 2043, but yet the withholdings are going to continue through 2046. Is there some elaboration in terms of why those two don't align with one another?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's the way the law was written. So it just provides that opportunity for Minneapolis for us to use those sales tax receipts during that time period. That's how it was structured.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, on line or slide 9, then, kind of gets to the meat of the matter. So under option 1, when we're talking about refinancing on a tax-exempt basis, the middle of 2023. In comparison to option number 2, my first question is, could you give us any idea in terms of the differential between refinancing on a tax-exempt or a taxable basis in terms of how much the state would realize in a savings if you did one over the other?
Mr. Franz?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are so many moving parts in that. I mean, we simply believe at this point that the savings would outweigh. It's difficult to measure the magnitude because of all the market factors that are involved. You know, if you wanted, we could put together some scenarios, but right now we just believe that it's unlikely that the overall savings would be greater now than in 2023.
And Commissioner, would there not be a taxable situation for the bondholders?
Mr. Chair.
It's my understanding with option 2 that if you refinance now, they would be taxable funds?
Well, Mr. Chair, what happens is that we would actually not pay off those bonds until 2023.
And so you would just wait. And
we would capture the interest savings today, put it into an escrow account, and keep it until 2023, which adds further complication to doing it now rather than later. Okay. But to the bondholders, their bond would be retired as it is in 2023.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of a scenario where you actually refinance now, and that would create a tax obligation on the part of bondholders. But you're saying it would be an escrow. Okay, that clarifies one of my questions. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You and I are thinking alike. So, Commissioner, on this, going back to option number 1, so if we refinance, we're, it looks like we're going to refinance the entirety of the issuance. So then going forward after 2023, if we refinance, two-part question. One is, what would the debt service presumably be on that, given where interest rates are today? I'm sure you probably have some idea about that. And then commensurate with that, not only, it looks to me like we would be realizing a substantial savings annually that would accumulate to an enormous amount over the course of if we don't refinance. So have you given thought in terms of what amount of the people's money we're freeing up to do other work if we refinance in 2023?
Commissioner, and I understand you have other staff present if you need to.
Mr. Chair, you just reached that question. I'd like to have Jen Hassmer come up, the Assistant Commissioner, to ask to deal with some of those, because those are great questions, and I don't have that information quite available.
I didn't mean you weren't doing a great job.
No, I was just getting ready to dial a friend.
Of other potential MMB people, if the questions warranted it. So if those that are going to answer could identify themselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jennifer Hassmer. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. The question that I noted, and perhaps Representative Albright, you could restate it just to make sure that I'm clear on what you're asking here.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's just, for the sake of argument, assume that we're moving forward on option number one. What would be the debt service reduction under a refinance schematic, and what does that save the state and the taxpayer over the course of the time that presumably, if we did nothing, that issue would still be in existence? So what is the debt service amount saved, either annually or cumulatively, over the course of the maturity of those bonds?
Commissioner Hassman.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, of course, I think
Hassmer.
I think one of your comments before hit on it a little bit, that it completely depends on the interest rates in the current market. And as Commissioner France has already referenced, the current market is wildly swinging right now, so it's very hard to pin down an exact savings amount. We have looked back in January about some interest rate savings, looking at doing a refinancing now on a taxable basis versus in 2 or 3 years on a tax-exempt basis. The annual savings were different by about $4 million on an annual basis. However, rates have changed quite a bit since we had done that analysis, so I can't say for sure that same scale would apply today in today's rates.
And just to follow on to that, Mr. Chair, would it be safe to say that the liquidity that is realized is into the hundreds of millions of dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it all depends on the rates in the market, whether or not any of the stadium reserve might be used in the future to apply towards a refunding. Of course, the savings would be realized on an annual basis over time, so you're talking over 20 years. On a cumulative basis, it could be that big, but keep in mind that it would be spread over 20 years.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I think the line of questioning that I've raised here really goes to a larger point that I think Ways and Means is responsible for in being good stewards of the money appropriated for any project, and particularly with the largesse of this project and with an opportunity somewhat near in the future. I think it's really important that we take a look at how do we minimize the expenditure relevant to what we already have in place. It wouldn't be any different from interest rates on a homeowner who then looks at rates and says, you know, I can save half of my mortgage payment by refinancing and redeploy those assets to something else that benefits my family. I'm using that analogy because I think that proves that the state is being a good steward, and I appreciate the commissioner bringing this option forward. I'd like to possibly see your organization, your department, put together a spreadsheet along the lines of the questions that I've asked, so that we could functionally look at the numbers in a little more relevant basis as opposed to the what-if scenarios. I'm sure that you can talk with the, you know, the actuaries and whatnot to see the underwriters, the syndicates, if you will, and see, well, if interest rates stayed within a range of 40 or 50 basis points of where they are now, what would that do over the course of the next 18 to 20 months before they're issued again? But I think this makes very, very strong prudent sense, and it's a good program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, might I just come back to a question I think that Representative Houseman had. I just want you to be aware, and we're not going to get into the whole complex array of funding that exists for the Viking Stadium, but I just want to make a couple of statements. There is a reserve account, aside from the one we're talking about, that is within the financial statements and under the control of the Minnesota Sports Authority for capital improvements. And that is derived from a combination of revenue that comes from the state and from the Vikings. They make a payment for that. But the most significant amount of revenue comes from a contract that the state negotiated with the organization that essentially manages U.S. Bank. SMG is the name of that company now. And it's a revenue sharing agreement from which the stadium derives a significant amount of money for operations and for any capital improvements or repairs that need to be made. So I guess at some point, Mr. Chair and members, if you really want to get the full picture of where we're at with the financing of the stadium, and not only paying off the bonds in whatever way, you know, you and the executive branch choose, but I think at some point, again, back to our main point, that we have a really big asset sitting over there in Minneapolis, and it costs a lot of money from a lot of different sources. It brings in a lot of revenue, but it endures a lot of wear and tear. And there are going to be situations where you need to know what is the current financial situation within the operations of the U.S. Bank, governed by the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. So far, and I think the commissioner can certainly add here, I think they've done a good job of managing their financial situation. And it hasn't always been simple and easy. I mean, for example, for the Final Four basket tournament, they had to bring in what was called a darkening cloth over the curtain. And there have been a number of other things. You may be aware that right now there have to be repairs on the outer skin because of some leakage problems. So at some point, if you want to get this full picture of where we're at and where the expenses might be in the future, you might want to have the Minnesota Sports Authority current chair, Mike Vekage, come and give you that perspective as well.
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Nobles, for bringing that up. I think one of the interesting things about the financing of this stadium, it is a revenue-generating facility. And unlike a lot of state assets that we have, one of the things I think made a lot of sense at the time was to figure out how do we maintain the facility, because it needs to compete on an annual basis with other venues. And part of the competition for the NCAA tournament required this darkening curtain. So I think that's a great suggestion. And I think one of the things that that we need to make sure that you as the policy members understand is how we're managing that, how we're maintaining the facility, keeping it up to date so it has that new look to it, so they can book new events in the future. So this is an unusual situation where the state is engaged in this activity, and obviously we have the management manage the situation with the Vikings on an ongoing basis. So it is complex, and I think that is a great suggestion. Thank you.
I was asked for this hearing if we should request Mr. Vekage to testify, and in the interest of time, I said, well, if there were specific questions of Mr. Vekage, maybe individual members could ask, but in light of the comments that were made, perhaps at some future time, if necessary, we can invite Mr. Vekage to come in. But I thought we had a full plate with Mr. Nobles and Commissioner Franz. So that's something that we can entertain for future discussion if need be. We've got a whole long list here. Representative Albright, were you done?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being with us this morning. You mentioned earlier in your presentation that the gambling revenue is used not only to service bonds, but also about $12 million a year, I believe you mentioned, in expenses related to the stadium. Could you just give us a rough idea of what's involved in that $12 million, and does that vary from year to year, and what's the projection for those expenditures?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to bring up Brian Dahl in our budget division, who has that spreadsheet that has those numbers on an annual basis and what they are.
Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Brian Dahl, Minnesota Management and Budget. The expenses include the debt service, as mentioned, and then there are obligations that Mr. Nobles mentioned, the payments to the stadium MSFA for the capital and operating reserve. There's a grant to the city. In fiscal 19, that was $8.2 million. And then a couple of smaller payments. One is a grant to the city of St. Paul for sports facilities. And then 1% of the gambling revenue is set aside each year for problem gambling appropriations at DHS.
And remember, it's in your packet, I think, is that that information is on the forecast document, if I'm looking at it correctly here. So that's in the packet as well. Mr. Dahl, was that?
Yeah, that's correct. It's on page 78 of our forecast document. We publish it and update it with each forecast.
Well, maybe not. I've got page 77. Is it? Do we have? Who's the last? Okay, but this is the the one that we should be looking at. Ours is page 77 then, okay. But it's the correct document.
That's correct, yep.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, was that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple follow-ups.
Okay.
So that $8.2 million you mentioned, how is that amount determined? Does it vary from year to year? And who decides how much they get?
That appropriation started as $6 million per year for operating for MSFA, and then $1.5 million per year for the capital reserve. And then it increases at an annual inflation factor, which I don't know off the top of my head what that's based on, but it increases approximately 2% per year. It may be the rate at which Minneapolis sales tax grows year over year.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you mentioned the Minneapolis sales tax item. Is how much and how is that determined?
Mr. Dahl?
Mr. Chair. The retained Minneapolis sales tax will begin to be collected by the state in fiscal year 21. At $17 million per year, and that $17 million covers the current year obligations for the city of Minneapolis portion of stadium payments, so the capital reserve, the operating payments, and their portion of debt service. And then it also covers the payments that the state made on the city's behalf starting in fiscal 16 through 20.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So those payments made on their behalf were debt service up to this point?
It was their portion of debt. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It was their portion of debt service and the payments the state made for the operating and capital reserve on the city's behalf beginning in fiscal year 16.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I this could go on for a while, but so this it's slated to continue till 2046. And that's after the bonds have been paid off, if I'm not mistaken. Who will determine how much revenue is taken from the city of Minneapolis at that point, and what will it be used for?
Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I'll let the commissioner answer that.
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair and Representative. Well, as you know, part of this payment is to pay the state back, which is, you know, done over time. So it just takes through 2046 to make sure that the state has received all of its payments, and the payments have been made to the stadium capital account and operating account. So that's a reason why, I don't know why it was structured that way in 2012, but it was structured that way to make sure that the state received all of its repayments on behalf of the city sales tax.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't go on. I know there's others on your list. I would just comment that, you know, we heard it earlier on another bill how there's money kind of laying around, for lack of a better term. We know that there's a variety of accounts here that seem to have quite a bit of flexibility in them. I was around when we had a $6-point-something billion deficit, and we were looking under all the couch cushions for money, and it's surprising how much money within state government is, shall I say, flexible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The one thing I would comment when we're dealing with bonding, however, you've got other requirements to make sure that the bond houses in New York are comfortable with what we're doing with various funds, which is kind of another component with all this discussion. But Representative Hertaus.
All right. Thank you, Chair Carlson and Commissioner Franz. First, I would like to, you know, just commend you and your department on what I see to be a fairly good practice of watching out for making sure that the financing of debt is done at the lowest possible cost. Although I consider myself to be fairly astute in finance and high finance, bonding market has been a little out of my wheelhouse, and I have a couple of questions I would like to have you just clarify for me. When you're doing these refunding bonds, I'm presuming that you're keeping it within the same term of years, or are we actually extending the debt at a lower interest rate? And does that, in effect, mitigate some of the savings that occurs by refunding the bonds? That would be my first question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to bring Assistant Commissioner Hassemer up again to talk about some of these technical requirements.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we refinance bonds, we will not extend, we will not go beyond what the original final maturity was. So 2043 is the current final maturity. If and when we refinance, we won't extend that date. We could shorten it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. That's good news. The second question is, last week I learned from the Rural Finance Authority and the issue about doing the rural bonding for farm credit, that MMB in its in the RFA's repayment of this debt, that MMB retains a certain amount of that repayment. If that is correct, it sounds like some of these debt instruments generate revenue for MMB. Is that correct, and does that happen with all bond issues?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, MMB does not retain any amount of money from in a refinancing obligation. We just pay the debt service and the cost of issuance on the bonds.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for that answer. That's two of three. And the last question is regarding commissions. Obviously, there are costs added to the bond issue that are associated with getting the bonds sold. And I'm curious as to if a typical bonding bill were $1 billion, how much commissions are the commission houses making off of a bond issue of that nature? And whatever that is that a competitive bid situation, or are there preferred vendors that the state always uses?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the state regularly sells its bonds on a competitive basis, so we do not go out and pre-select an underwriter to purchase our bonds. We feel we get the best competitive interest rates given our strong AAA rating with the rating agencies. Underwriters they price in their costs of purchasing the bonds and then reselling them. I don't have an estimate or a percentage to give you in terms of what their share is. And then there's a much smaller share for the costs associated with MMB's technical work to get the bonds to the market and sell them to the underwriters.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. So those costs are really buried in the actual offering rate, and is there any requirement or disclosure as, I mean, in the real estate industry, we have to disclose what we're being paid to our clients. Is there any requirement that the bond houses actually tell you how much they're earning off of the issue of these bonds?
Ms. Hassemer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do know when we get the bids in on our competitive sale date what their underwriter's discount, they call it, is, the amount that they will be making on the transaction. So we have those dollar figures for each of our bond issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the only other question I didn't hear answered, in a typical billion-dollar bill, do you have an idea of what that number is?
Ms. Hassemer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not have that number exactly with me, but I would like to clarify, are you just talking the state's cost for bringing the bonds to market, or are you also interested in the underwriter's share of that transaction?
I was mostly interested. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was mostly interested in the underwriting cost.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative, I would have to get back to you on that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just going to mention to the committee members, and I'm sure the commissioner could let members know, but some of us that served on capital investment, I think when Representative Hausman was chair, we were invited to go over and observe the sale of those bonds, which is a very interesting process. And what I was amazed at is how quickly it goes, where the various bond houses are making their bids, and you watch it on a screen, and boom, flashes up then who gets the bid. And I don't know what's usually what midsummer, I think, that that happens. So maybe you can invite committee members to attend again.
Mr. Chair, yeah, it's usually the first week of August is when we're still planning on that this year, obviously depending upon market conditions. But yes, we'd be happy to have anyone. It's really, really boring until the last 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then the last 30 seconds, you need to strap yourself. Well, really 5 seconds probably. It's amazing how quickly they all decide what their final price is and then send it in at the last moment. So it's a lot of sitting around and then a lot of excitement, and it's over pretty quick. But we saw how many different tranches, usually two or three. Three to five tranches of sometimes it's refinancing and sometimes it's different kind of general obligation bonds. So anyone who will, make sure you know when that happens, and we'd love to have a group. Just bring some popcorn, and it'll be a lot of fun, I think.
You wouldn't have to have too big a bag of popcorn. It goes pretty quick.
It's pretty quick.
But in all my years in the legislature, until just a few years ago, when Representative Hausman invited the Capital Investment Committee, those that were interested to go over and observe, I'd never seen that, and I thought it was a rather interesting opportunity. Representative Hertaus, were you done?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interestingly, I was just going to suggest that very thing, that everybody at some point on the Ways and Means should observe that process. It's worth going. Mr. Chair, and Mr. Noble sort of intrigued me with a comment he made as a follow-up, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it sounds to me as though there are two parts to this contract and reserve account, and actually two separate reserve accounts. One is the debt to build it, but the other that I sensed concerns me more, and that is it sounded as though there's another contract and another reserve account for ongoing maintenance, and it almost sounded as though the state would be legally obligated if something happens of a capital nature, and that doesn't end, that our obligation there doesn't end. And the argument was, well, it generates revenue, so of course that we also have to bear some of the costs. But in fact, that would be true of XL Energy Center, it would be true of the Twin Stadium, but we don't, I don't think, have that kind of obligation as a state. Now, maybe I am misunderstanding something about that ongoing, the contract for ongoing maintenance.
Who would like to take that one? Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, there is, as I understand it, and the commissioner was more involved in putting together the financing law, but the state has an obligation to make a payment to the Minnesota Sports Facilities Commission. I think that's in around $9 million a year that is for ongoing operations. Again, the Vikings also make a payment. The largest amount of revenue, though, comes from what the commissioner referred to as the revenue-generating capacity, which is kind of under the management of SMG. I don't know, Representative Houseman, that if there were something, you know, really catastrophic, let's say, that went beyond the revenues that are already there, that the state would be legally obligated. But the state certainly has an interest, as the commissioner said, in maintaining the attractiveness, let's say, of the U.S. Bank Stadium as a venue, not only for the Vikings, but for many other events that occur there. I mean, we are in competition with lots of other facilities. So if something were to happen, again, beyond the financial resources that are already there, that's a decision that obviously would have to come to the legislature and be made by the legislature. It is one of the things that you could keep in mind about the reserve that we've been talking about, and that is the reserve that the Metropolitan, or I keep on wanting to call it Metropolitan, it's now Minnesota Sports Facilities Commission. If they don't have the resources in their reserves, there could be some interest in using some of the reserve that we've been talking about, that is used mostly for financing of the bonds. But if there were excess revenues there, you might want to consider a contingency for upkeep, capital expenditures, other kinds of things. But again, I think that would be something that you maybe want to have an ongoing oversight by some committee or commission with the Minnesota Sports Facilities Commission. I know it's controversial, and undoubtedly there are people at your table that didn't vote for the Viking Stadium. But it exists. It was very expensive to build. It's expensive to maintain. It endures lots of wear and tear. And there is some interest, I think, on the part of the state to ensure that it is maintained as a viable revenue-generating facility. But I will leave that to you all to decide how you want to participate that in that. I will just say one other thing. Again, Mike Vekage is the current chair. I think he's done a really good job of dealing with the situations that have come up within the resources he has. My understanding, and I visit with Mr. Vekage from time to time, that he was able to negotiate a fair deal on the replacement of the leaking panels, because there was some liability on the part of the construction company. So it wasn't just that it was the obligation of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Commission to pay for that repair. He negotiated a shared payment with the contractor as well.
I guess, Mr. Chair, just a concluding question that maybe doesn't have an answer, but what confuses me is why the state would have a greater interest in the physical condition of this facility than, say, the Twin Stadium, that we don't have a similar kind of ongoing obligation.
Commissioner Fran?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so when the law was originally designed, it was designed with the statutory requirement that we maintain an operating and budget reserve to keep the facility operating. We are the state of Minnesota owns the facility, and as such, we wanted to make sure that we were committed to keeping it in good shape and economically viable. So that's the nature of that budget reserve and the operational account. So, and that continues and it increases as at an inflationary rate. So I think that the difference here is that we wanted to make sure in this facility that we had a separate account designed to keep it up. You know, one of the things, as you know, as former chair of the Capital Investment Committee, we don't do this generally with state assets. And we build these buildings and facilities, and then we wait until they need repair, and then we come up with the money to repair them. And so in this particular case, the legislature in 2012 had the foresight to really figure that this is something we need to make sure that there's a statutory ongoing obligation by the state. Now, in this particular case, as Mr. Nobles mentioned, we were fortunate because it is such an incredible facility that we were able to negotiate a contract with a management team to come in and manage booking the events and running the day-to-day of the facility. And that was worth some money as well. So they that particular contractor pays the state of Minnesota to as part of the money that they make on running the facility into this to these accounts. So it's really working quite well at this point. As Mr. Nobles mentioned, Mr. Vekic can give you sort of the details, day-to-day operation stuff, but it's worked out really well thus far, and so we like the way the situation works.
Representative Hausman, is that I think on this point, Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think the answer to why we're responsible for this and not the Twin Stadium is my understanding is the Twin Stadium is technically owned by the Hennepin County, and they're on the hook for that one, where we own the United or U.S. Bank Stadium, and the XL State Center is owned by the City of St. Paul, so they're on the hook for that. So it's who owns the building, ultimately, I believe, is why we're on the hook for the stadium.
Okay, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Down
and
here,
your
I'm
hand.
Kind of hidden by a few of the other people. And I'm not sure if this goes to Mr. Nobles or the commissioner, but back to slide 3. I'm looking at the line that says increased tax rates paid by organizations that offer legal gambling, because this whole thing is predicated on that gambling revenue. And I'm curious, and I know it could be a long explanation, but how they changed. And I'll tell you where I'm going with this is that basically it appears to me that the payments of the stadium are now borne on the backs of nonprofits that are doing charitable gambling, because we must have done something back then to change the rates. And so that's the reason for the question. How much more are they paying for this stadium basically through their tax on lawful gambling than they were before this event happened with the stadium?
Mr. Chair, that entire complex of decisions made with respect to the taxation of charitable gambling was one that was put together in 2012 as well, and it was designed to provide a different tax structure. And so there were a lot of changes made, and in addition to the different changes that were made, there was the opportunity for the charitable gambling to expand into the electronic pull tab area. So it was a combination of a number of factors that were used to do that. And you may recall in 2012 that the idea was to not have any existing revenue stream be used to help finance the stadium. And so that's why this opportunity to expand charitable gambling into a new area, the electronic pull tabs, was used as the vehicle. So any general fund revenues over $36.9 million that were brought in during those years was attributable to the stadium. So it's not directly tied to all of the charitable gambling, but it was just decided that any new revenues brought in beyond that point would be dedicated to this purpose. But it doesn't, you know, it's simply a mechanism to select a revenue stream that's different than just regular general fund obligations. So it was a bit of trying to shoehorn something into the existing revenue stream, but that's how it was set up. And we'd have to go back and look and take a look at what the difference is in terms of revenue paid over the years. I don't have that readily available, but it was a mechanism that was both and at the time beneficial to the charitable gambling groups, because it expanded and enhanced their opportunities to engage in that activity, and it increased the flow to their charitable activities. So it's not, I don't think it's very simple to say that it was an overall net increase or decrease. We'd have to look at it specifically.
Representative Vogel. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to, we don't have time or the inclination maybe to go in that really deep right now, but I do think that whether if we're going to have any future discussions, that we really need to zero in on this, because you know, I'm familiar, I think all of us are, with the local Lions clubs, the Rotary clubs, the sports teams, the baseball teams, and everything else. They're actually paying for this thing out of their gambling. If you look at the spreadsheet, I mean, that's where the majority of this revenue is coming from. So I ask that if we're going to have future discussions on this, that that become a real critical part of those discussions, because those outfits, I've always looked at when our local Lions Club does charitable gambling, they're leveraging that money by volunteer labor that's parlaying it into much more than what they're actually collecting in those gambling revenues. So I would ask that. A second question is on the discontinuance of the corporate franchise tax revenue, and who gets to make that decision? Because as you can see from the spreadsheet, from 14 through 18, there was $20 million diverted from the corporate tax revenue to this fund, and now it has stopped. And I'm wondering how that decision is made. Who makes that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that decision is made jointly by the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. So in the November forecast of 2018, wasn't it? 2018, it became apparent that the revenues from the charitable gambling were sufficient to maintain not only the annual payments, but also to continue adding to the reserve. And so rather than take, and it's no diversion, what happens is those corporate income tax revenues that were designated are going into the general fund. So by not using those, the money stayed in the general fund and it was not diverted to the U.S. Bank Stadium. So at that time, it was decided that there would be another $100 million on top of this current estimate. So the estimate in 2023 of $263 million would be $363 million if we had not stopped continuing to put that money into the reserve account. And the statute provided that the Commissioner of Revenue, in consultation with the Commissioner of MMB, could make that determination of how much of the up to $20 million a year should be placed into this account. And we decided in November of 2018 that no additional monies were used, and none have been put in since that time from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think to Mr. Noble's part, suggestions that, again, that probably is something that should be looked at, because there's a lot of discretion that seems to be vested. And I'm not suggesting it was done wrong, but we're talking about $100 million of corporate tax revenue over those 5 years that were changed. So I also have a question on that, the breakdown, what that breakdown actually is for the total payments for the city stadium obligations. Because it sounds like, and to Representative Hausman's question, that some of that is going into some account for capital improvements, and generally in an operating business, you're able to fund your capital improvements, your repairs, out of your revenue that you're generating, your net income or whatever. I'm curious, what is the breakdown of the $8,177,000 in 2019 between what is being used for that money and the actual debt reduction?
I think we're turning to Mr. Dahl again.
Mr. Chair, yeah, Mr. Dahl has that information.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, Brian Dahl with MMB. That the $8.2 million in fiscal year 19, I don't have the actual specific split, but I can tell you its origin. It started as a base appropriation of $6 million for operating payments to MSFA and $1.5 million for the capital reserve. And that amount has grown year over year based on the growth in the Minneapolis sales tax receipts each year to the $8.2 million, and then growing beyond that into the forecast period.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically the whole or $8.2 million is going toward either the operation or the capital cost of the stadium. Minneapolis is also responsible for part of then the $30 million in payments. So that whole $17 million coming in here in 2021, $17,183, how does that relate to either the payments or this reserve? Because I believe Minneapolis was on a catch-up basis, right? They didn't pay in for a long time, and now they're supposed to kind of overpay to catch up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, that's correct. The $17 million can be thought of as in three parts. It's paying for the current year obligation for the city's portion of the debt service, paying for the current year obligation for the capital and operating reserve we spoke about, and then paying back for the state's payments made on the city's behalf from fiscal year 2016 through fiscal year 20.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair. So the current year debt service for the city of Minneapolis, or the ongoing debt service, I guess it would be, for the Minneapolis portion, how much is that? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative, approximately $9 million.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one other follow-up then, kind of. So I'm curious now, if we refi the city's portion of the $30 million appears to be $9 million. So if we refi and the money is continuing to be collected from the city of Minneapolis, will that also then be adjusted, or will that just kind of continue to come in and build this fund? And because obviously the $9 million would decrease some each year if you're refi and have a better rate on the bonds. Just curious how that all works.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, that will have to be adjusted. I mean, if we do change sort of the net payable and the interest payable, we've been basing these payments on the current situation. So clearly, if we change that situation to refinance and come up with a different payment schedule, we'll have to make some adjustments, and we'll have to look at that. But they will nonetheless be responsible for making sure that they pay the debt related to the $150 million debt cost plus any catch up. So it will have to sort out the payment structure after we refinance.
Just one quickie then. So I guess the question becomes here, then, would the $6 million going to operating and $1.5 million to capital reserves, would that have the potential under current statute to go up, or is that kind of capped?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that has the potential to continue to increase.
Thank you.
And maybe Mr. Dowell or the other staff can stay at the table so we don't have as much back and forth with the MMB staff. Mr. Nobles is sliding. Any questions, Mr. Nobles?
I'd be happy to relinquish my chair.
I'm not asking you to move, but if there aren't any more questions, maybe that would be fine. Rep, we got one, two, at least three more members that have questions. One of them was Representative Drazkowski. I think he may be left, so I guess it's Representative Lilly is next.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine's more of a comment. I was lucky enough to be involved as this was coming to development, this whole idea of the Viking Stadium, and I wasn't the key author by a long shot, but it was interesting to watch the process as it came about and developed, and then ultimately got to the House floor and all that. But, you know, there was a very mixed effort. The GOP was in charge at the time, and the gentleman that's standing up, I think, was Representative Davids and Representative Lanning were definitely strong supporters. At least that's my memory, if it's serving me right. And but it was a hybrid of members. There was quite a few people that were against it, so it's kind of exciting for me to see that that it's turned into a success. I think the effort between the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis, and the Wolf family and the Vikings have lived up to the betterment of Minnesota. The, you know, the college and high school sports have all been there, the Super Bowl, the Final Four, these things they promised, concerts and the Vikings. I don't remember them promising a Vikings Super Bowl, but maybe we should have asked them for that. But hopefully we can get there someday. But I certainly remember the first year was a tough one for those of us that were involved, because we kind of held our heads low because that iPad, the lottery came in lower than we had projected and hoped, and we weren't so proud then. We were a little we were holding our heads low, and the state came in and helped it in that year or afterwards or whatever and refunded. But now it's kind of neat to see that it's gone through the roof. I remember literally seeing an iPad, and we were thinking, oh, people are going to switch from popping pull tabs to swiping on an iPad. And they handed around an iPad in a room, and we all thought, oh, this is no, you know, we weren't really sure if it'd work. And it, you know, the gamblers are interested in doing it, which is befuddles me. And but it's been a success. But I think it's been good for Minnesota, and I'm glad that we're looking at it, continuing to look at it, and into the future. But boy, I think the state's the better for this stadium.
And when you talk about Representative Lilly looking at it, that was a point that Mr. Nobles made with his testimony, that their recommendation was that the legislature take a good look at it, and he was complimentary of the hearing today doing yep. that very thing.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Lilly. I think one of the things that, and I know Mr. Nobles and his team, when they looked at this last fall, were just amazed at the complexity of how this particular financing was stood up and how it worked well. But it really is people like Brian Dahl, who's the Director of Financial Planning, and Jen Hassimer, the Assistant Commissioner, is these people who day-to-day make sure that they manage the law and the financial requirements and reporting requirements. So I'm really proud of the way that they have managed these resources so that the legislature has access to really good, accurate, and legally compliant information. And clearly there are decisions, you know, going forward we can all talk about. And so I really look forward to that sort of exchange of information and ideas in this case. But it's really, I just want to shout out the MMB folks for the way they've managed this over the last number of years. And Brian has always been involved in this and has done an excellent job. So thank you.
Okay. We have the room longer, but our normal adjournment is 5 minutes ago. So I think we'll try to stay with our normal adjournment as close as we can. And Representative Albright, you'll be the last with a question, and then I have a brief announcement, and then we'll adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I will be brief. I think there's two comments. The first is that we have heard a lot about the moving parts of the financing that was put together to enable this back in 2012. And based upon whatever legislation is enacted, whether it's coming from the Senate or if there's a House file that is the companion for the Senate, I'm just wondering if we might kind of pre-authorize the Legislative Budget Office to enact kind of a fiscal note on that, because I think a lot of what we're talking about here goes to the heart in terms of the effect of refinancing or not refinancing has on the various accounts that are kind of intertwined in this whole process. Secondarily to that, Mr. Vekich's name has been broached on a number of occasions, and Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if on the occasion of you talking with him, the next time you might invite him to the Ways and Means to kind of extend and elaborate on some of the conversation that we've had here, and maybe that's in conjunction with the possibility of receiving that fiscal note. This is, as has been said by the testifiers, probably one of the more complicated undertakings that the state has accomplished in recent memory, and so I think it's important that we identify it on a fiscal note basis, as well as understand particularly the capital reserve account. I think there's still some questions relevant to, as Representative Vogel and others have mentioned, is there a cap on it, is it not, where does it go? I think rather than us belabor the point with MMB or otherwise, I think it might be kind of a testimony to the establishment of the LBO and how they might bring some efforts to bear on that topic. So thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just respond. I mentioned earlier that I had no contact from Mr. Vekich, but I was asked if we wanted to include him on the agenda, and I thought with MMB and the legislative auditor. We had a full plate for this morning. So my thought was if individuals had questions of Mr. Vekic, they could contact him. But I certainly am open at some point if we do any more work with the stadium finance this session to inviting Mr. Vekic in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So the other thing is then, being that you were the last one with a question, I'm going to ask people to watch the schedules this week. We may have other bills that we may need to move for action either to other committees or perhaps to the House floor. So we'll watch your schedules and we'll try to give as much notice as possible. But interesting enough, we're already at that point where, as you've noticed with our agenda earlier, we're moving a lot of stuff pretty quickly. So with that, unless anybody has a question about upcoming meetings, there's not one scheduled for tonight, Al, that we finished. Remember, that was something that was available if need be. I guess I wanted to get through the agenda. Meeting adjourned. Hi.